You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. It is Thursday, April the 15th. It's the third and final day of Newmarket's Craven meeting today. I'm off to Cheltenham this afternoon for some late season jumps racing on a card that is exclusively restricted to mares and provides them with several black type winning opportunities as well. Looking forward to an excellent weekend. All the best of the action in the UK has been postponed until Sunday to a clear space around the funeral of His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh. And with that in mind, it was lovely to see Her Majesty the Queen have a winner yesterday at Newmarket with Tactical. Newmarket yesterday really belonged in terms of trainers to William Haggis. He had three important winners, including My Oberon, but more significantly in the short term anyway, as far as the 1,000 guineas is concerned, Sacred, who won the Nell Gwynn Stakes with quite a sharp turn of foot. Rishi Prasad is my guest today. Rishi, are you getting classic fever yet?
It's slowly taking a hold, yes. I guess because, as always, it follows on the back of such good racing over jumps. And I myself was at Cheltenham yesterday, so I enjoyed some old favourites doing their stuff. But yes, watching Newmarket from afar and with what's to come today at Newmarket, definitely it's taking hold of me.
We had a good running of the Nell Gwynn Stakes yesterday, won by a fast filly in Sacred, who had the best two-year-old form. Is she likely to come out best of those that she beat toward the end of the season, do you think?
I'm not sure she will. I think, obviously, a very good start to the season for her, and the tongue tie probably made a bit of a difference. But I think Love Is You has the potential to be the best of them all. She was obviously very talented last year in her two wins. She travelled quite nicely. Jason Watson probably couldn't get a clear enough run early enough to get after her, but she stayed on nicely. No excuses, really, but I like the way she finished her race. And given what the team from Racing TV was saying yesterday, who were at Newmarket, I think a huge amount of improvement is coming her way. So I think she might turn out to be the best of them. I think there's a horse further back, though, Lucky, that some people may giggle when I say I think she might win a race at a big price, a good race at a big price at some point this season, because she's got a lot of talent. She's clearly not straightforward, but Seattle Rock, she won off a big price yesterday in the Nell Gwynn, 40-1. She didn't have a hard race. She was held up at the back. She travelled really nicely. She got a bit unbalanced coming down the dip. And then under hands and heels, she was picking up quite nicely in the race. She's better than a 40-1 in the Nell Gwynn. I'm sure of that. She ran some really good races, placed efforts in big races as a two-year-old. And there's clearly a very, very talented filly. If it can be harnessed in the right direction with the right combination of circumstances, and of course, that's always the caveat, I think she could win a really good race at some point this season, whether it's a classic or not, I'm not too sure. But I think she's got an official rating in the 90s. She's definitely better than that.
Well, Rishi, you mentioned Love Is You there, who's bred by Philippa Cooper, her Normandy stud, and we thought ran a very good race yesterday in the Nell Gwynn, perhaps to put a spot on for one of the classics. Philippa also had Mahafath, who she bred, who ran for Shadwell Estates later in the afternoon and won for William Haggis. And it's a really nice group of horses bred by Philippa running around at the moment. Philippa's on the line now. You went to Newmarket yesterday, and I would say you had a pretty good day. Or maybe not, I don't know.
By all accounts, we should have had a good day. I mean, I was pleased with the filly. She didn't have that sort of electric turn of foot that she had shown last year. And there was always a doubt about the ground, although the trainer thought the ground wouldn't be a problem at all. But Jason Watson told us that she couldn't go on the ground. She was unbalanced in the dip. She didn't like the course. And then there was no sort of burst of speed. I thought she stayed on nicely. She obviously needs a mile, which is good, because she's run over a mile before. But she needs good or softer. She's very much like her brother, Glorious Journey, and Mum, who needed, you know, who won the coronation on soft ground as well. So I think the sort of family trait continues. I don't think we'll be going back to Newmarket in 2 weeks' time. There's no rain forecast, and she didn't like the course, so I wouldn't see that there's any point. And I want a filly for this year. For me, the Guineas, I don't know why, but the Guineas isn't a be-all and end-all. I think she's got a nice race in her, but I don't see it as the Guineas.
Well, you know better than anybody else. These things keep coming out in pedigrees, and if you suddenly got a deluge before Royal Ascot, she might emulate her mum and win the Coronation Stakes.
Well, one never knows. I mean, there is the option of going for the French Guineas, and she's actually in that. That was the only race we put her in abroad. And again, I'm not so sure. It's up to the trainer. I understand if he wants to go for the Guineas, but you know what it's like? You go to France and all those French jockeys, and it's very difficult. And the travelling and all the restrictions, I don't even know if it would be possible anyway. So I will leave that to the trainer, what he decides to do.
And you came away with a winner that you'd bred in Mahaffeth. Does that give you as much pleasure, even if it's in somebody else's colours?
Yes, of course it does. I mean, obviously we sold them at the sales, and I loved this particular horse. There's also another horse who runs on Friday called Hurricane Lane with Godolphin. And I tend to sell my horses to Godolphin and to Sheikh Hamdan because they can see through these horses, and I tend to sort of sell horses that are going to be 3, 4, 5, even 6 years old in the case of, you know, Duncan and Samuel. So luckily for me, they can come back every year, and it's incredibly important that the horses do well for them. So it gives me as much pleasure. I'm very, very proud, and he's a particularly nice horse, as is the Gale Force. So I just really, really want them to do well.
And did you, what was it like as an owner yesterday at Newmarket?
Awful. I mean, it's just the worst experience. First of all, you're all in masks. We just look like a bunch of down and outs, a lot of us. You know, normally when you go racing, you're sort of a bit glammed up. I mean, you've got like a muzzle all over your face. I mean, you're wearing glasses as well. I mean, this is the whole thing during lockdown. It's sort of the incentive to bother. And we sort of looked at people, and there were 4 people sitting on a bench. And Nick and I looked at them, and we said, my God, you just look like a couple, you know, about 4 tramps. And they were very high-profile owners. Anyway, no, don't ask me for the names.
Well, I'm hoping slowly the fog is lifting. Philippa, thanks so much for talking to me. And good luck with Love Is You wherever she goes next.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. Bye.
It was a very good day at Newmarket yesterday for William Haggis. Not only did he win the Nell Gwynn Stakes with Sacred, he also struck in the Earl of Sefton with a very promising My Oberon, and then with Mahaffeth in the 10 furlong handicap. That counts as a good day. I was most interested in his quote after the race in an interview with Lydia, where he said that John Gosden had got all these good horses out, made him pull his finger out. There's a nice little bit of friendly rivalry going on there, I've noticed in a few exchanges recently.
Yes, I quite enjoy it as well. I love this little, what do they call it now? Kids call it bants between these top trainers in Newmarket. But I think that there's the funniest things in racing, or the funniest things in life, where there's always a grain of truth. And I do believe that whilst we are enjoying the banter between John Gosden and William Haggis, there is a grain of truth that William Haggis has a big, strong, huge quality team. And he probably would like to be, I'll take that word out. He would like to be, who wouldn't with it, the team that he's got, the top dog in Newmarket. I'm sure he would. So, you know, John Gosden might be in for a battle this season. Whether William Haggis has quite the quality of John Gosden will only be borne out on the race course. But I do think that there is a grain of truth in what they talk about, and the fact that there is a certain amount of professional pride in who is top dog, considering the type of horses, the quality of horses, the number of horses in both those stables. And I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it very much. A few weeks ago, I interviewed William before a day ran in Australia and finished a brilliant second to Very Elegant. And we talked about the runners at the weekend. He said, I'm told John and Sadie Godson are going to win everything this weekend. And then I put that to John on the Saturday at Kempton, when John did win everything that weekend and won about 6 races across the world. And he said, It's good of William Haggis. He's a very good friend of mine. I don't know how he finds the time to handicap my horses as well as his own. and then William yesterday saying that. I thought this has got the makings of an entertaining season, I think. And it is a really powerful string that the Haggises are building up.
Yeah. And I think, like, with all the top trainers, you need a variety of top owners, a variety of wealthy owners, without question. And he's got that. He's got a whole raft of the established owner breeders, the syndicates. It's a really good mix of owners that have a large number of horses, as John Gosden has, as so many of the top stable has. But he's got horses that are established at the top level. He's got the youngsters coming through. And we've seen it so many times with William Haggis, the way he can get horses to progress. A Day being the best example of a horse that went through the handicap ranks and then turned into a top class Group One horse as he is now. So they can do it all. He can do it all. And it's going to be fascinating to see how the season unfolds with those two in particular.
A popular winner yesterday was Tactical in the colours of Her Majesty the Queen for Andrew Balding and Ashine Murphy. The significance of this will not be lost on anyone, and it certainly wasn't lost on the Queen's racing manager, John Warren, who said he really hoped this would give the Queen some cheer in a very, very difficult week.
Of course. A poignant success for Tactical yesterday in the colours of Her Majesty the Queen. No doubt it's obviously a tough time for her and the royal family, an emotional time. And perhaps, as John Warren said in his post-race interview, a little bit of a distraction with something positive will just ease the pain for the moment. And Tactical, I've got to confess, I thought he might just have been a two-year-old because of the way he appeared physically. He looked like a sort of butty two-year-old that would do very well early on, and maybe that was how his career would end up. But that was an excellent performance. I thought Naval Crown had them on the stretch going to the furlong pole, but he really stuck his neck out, and clearly it gives them a lot of options now because he's got speed. He's won over Shorter, obviously, and he's now won over seven furlongs. They're talking about the Jersey Stakes, which would be quite exciting if he did turn up there and there was the possibility of another royal winner at the royal meeting. And I think, looking a little bit closer to home, the run of the second Naval Crown at least gives us another idea about the strength and depth of Charlie Appleby's contenders as well, considering that the Craven's coming up today. He's got a couple of runs. And I think he's got a strong team of three-year-olds to play with, not just in the classics, but for the whole season.
Just on Tactical quickly, just to tie this up, if he went to the Jersey Stakes, he's already got a rating of 107. You know, add a couple of that to that for yesterday's performance, he's going to arguably set something like a form standard, or he'll be right up amongst the higher rated horses in the race. The trip will be absolutely ideal. They're certainly not going in too deep. If they want to play the straightest of bats in order to get a royal winner of some sort, irrespective of the race, I would say that's the race to run in rather than go to the St. James's Palace.
I totally agree. I think the Jersey Stakes gives him the best option of success at the Royal Meeting. I don't think St. James's Palace would be his race. I mean, Naval Crown gave him a pound yesterday, and you would probably consider that Naval Crown wouldn't be the best of the Appleby three-year-old colts. Therefore, you would imagine that over a mile in particular, there might well be better horses, with the fact that Charlie Appleby is likely to have maybe two Guineas contenders, if not three. We're just talking about Charlie Appleby. We haven't even talked about the Coolmore horses. So the horses that are likely to line up for the St. James's Palace Stakes are going to be stronger in terms of the depth of horses that are going to run in that race. Whereas the Jersey Stakes, it's slightly less quality, which is obviously why it's not a Group One race as the St. James's Palace Stakes is. And seven furlongs, far more in keeping with Tactical's trip. I think you're absolutely right that if there was a race for him at the Royal Meeting, it would be that. I think the Commonwealth Cup, if they drop back to six, also might be a struggle for him as well. So I think the hands are almost tied, having won over seven in the free handicap. So yeah, the Jersey Stakes, I think it is. There we are. We've solved it.
Just want to pick up a couple of other themes out of yesterday, throwing forward to the rest of the season. First of those is the return of Frankie Dettori to these shores after a very productive spell in the Middle East during the winter. And he seems raring to go for another spin round. I just wonder how this season will play out for him.
I think we've got an idea of how the season will play out for him considering the way he has used himself sparingly over the first few months. Yes, I know he was abroad, but even abroad, he was able to, the way he conducted himself, say, for example, in Dubai, where there's not a lot of riding out to be done in the morning. He can enjoy himself playing golf, doing what he does, chilling by the beach during the day. And then he has a handful of rides in the evening. That's sort of, I think, the template for the way Frankie will go about doing things this season, where he will pick and choose the rides. I mean, he's in his 50s now. He can pick and choose his rides. John Gosden is aware of that's how he'll be used this season. And you know, yesterday there were, I think, a couple of other rides that he could have taken on the card, but he took the rides that he felt gave him best chances of winning. He had that one winner. Global Giant was disappointing. But I think that's the only way to preserve his longevity. If he can't ride too much at his age. I mean, he's still incredibly fit. He still works incredibly hard and he spends a lot of time at the gym. And I think that's how he, you know, but it's how he was progressing anyway. Like, you know, as well as I do, you wouldn't find him that often riding in going that far for one of the smaller meetings unless there was a really good reason. So, In short, sharp bursts, like the best fast bowlers, but he's going to prove very effective.
Yeah, I just wondered who might be the beneficiaries of an even more selective process. Obviously, Rab Havlin's going to ride a lot of winners. Is it a given that Benoit de la Sayette is going to be champion apprentice? And I wonder whether James Doyle might have a very good season, given he seems to have reached parity again within Godolphin, riding the big winner the other day for them, and he'll be riding plenty of the Gosdens as well, and a few of the Haggises, I would have thought.
Well, I think that's the case, that there'll be some good rides going around. I mean, Martin Harley's obviously picked up a few rides as well for the John Gosden team. He's had a fair winter as well. So I think he'll be part of the mix. I agree with Benoit de la Sayette. I mean, he is, no one needs me to tell them just what a talented young rider he is. And I think his progress for 2021 will be one of the most fascinating aspects of the flat season, because I think there's a lot of qualities that suggest that not only is he possibly going to be champion apprentice, but he could also be a top class elite rider one day. We've seen it so many times and there's a long way to go, but the early signs are that he's clearly a very talented rider. But I do think that the James Doyle, William Buick as well. I mean, William Buick, I think, you know, depending on how things pan out, with James Doyle obviously having other options for William Haggis, etc., it's possible that William Buick might pick up some rides for John Gosden as well. I know Charlie Appleby's got a large team, but there'll be times where William Buick could pick up the odd ride for John Gosden. And of course, William Buick has spoken about the Jockeys Championship. So both he and James Doyle could potentially be beneficiaries if they do engage in Jockeys Championship battle from picking up rides for the champion trainer.
One man who won't be riding today is Kieran Fallon Jr. He has stood himself down because he didn't feel he was fit enough to do Oxted justice. I mean, that was a big call on his part, because you'd have thought, well, probably not the most difficult ride in the world, and he's a long odds on favourite on his seasonal comeback, but there'll be plenty more days, I guess.
There's a lot of maturity in a lot of these young riders and the way they deal with things, whether it's adversity, not getting rides that they perhaps deserved, or, you know, being honest about injuries. I mean, we saw it at the Cheltenham Festival. We're seeing it here in this particular incident with regards to Oxted. And by all accounts, he has done the right thing. The last thing he would want to do is compromise the horse's chances. And for whatever reason, the horse was beaten and the finger pointed at him. So in a sense, I think his options were limited in what he could do. It's either the right or wrong thing. And I think the right thing has been done. And sometimes people choose the wrong thing, which you can understand why they might do that, because they wouldn't want to give up the ride. But in this particular instance, I think Roger Teal and the connections of Oxted have already noted that they appreciate the thought process that young Kieran Fallon has put in ahead of his decision. And so no doubt he'll be rewarded with loyalty down the line.
For sure. And just finally, for the moment, Rishi, Aidan O'Brien has sent a number of horses to Newmarket this week. They've not really cut much ice so far. He could storm home in the Craven today, no doubt. He's got two very interesting runners, Khartoum and Sandhurst. But is he just having a sighter, do you think, to find out where his string are?
I'd be 99.9% certain that it is a sighter. The likes of Khartoum and Sandhurst, for the moment, at least, for the moment, aren't principal classic contenders, and they're probably, you know, a handful more back at base who are going to be his main contenders for the early classics of the season, whether it's obviously the Colts or the Phillies. Yes, and I think that the likes of Sanders and Cartoon, both with talent and pedigree, would perhaps be in the second or maybe even third rung in the pecking order. But it gives them a great gauge, doesn't it? It gives them a great gauge. I mean, we've talked so much in times gone by about the Dante being a great trial, but Ayton generally never used to, hadn't, still doesn't, I don't think, run his absolute best three-year-olds in the Dante, for example. Because I think that he uses that race as a guide, because we, or on this side of the sea, consider the Dante such a strong trial, for example. So he gets a gauge of where our best horses lines up with some of his second string horses. And then he can work out the strength of his squad. And I think that's exactly what's happening here. So I'm not going to tip either Khartoum or Sandhurst today and hope that something betters in the race for the British contenders.
Love is back at the weekend, of course.
I mean, how exciting is that? You know, she proved last season what a tremendous racehorse she was. And when she strung those victories together, she looked as if, you know, she would take all the beating in some of the autumn, the top autumn prizes. Sadly, we didn't get to see her in something like the Arc, but it's great that she's back this season and likely to set a very, very high standard for the older horses and for the three-year-olds when they eventually clash.
Well, Newmarket has staged a couple of quite decent-looking two-year-old races so far at the Craven meeting, and one threw up a surprise result on the face of it, with Desert Dreamer winning the fillies race yesterday at 25-1 for Holly Doyle and for Stuart Williams. Stuart, whose horses are running incredibly well, and he's churning out a whole load of winners, but whom you wouldn't normally associate with first amount two-year-olds on the Rowley Mile. But that's not uncommon with a lot of trainers this season. Stuart joins me now. Stuart, well done. Desert Dreamer looks quite a smart filly on her time, and particularly her closing splits.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with her. And she's been working nicely at home. She's been very straightforward all the way through. And we went there hopeful yesterday. When I got to the parade ring, all the trainers were there saying they fancy this and they fancy that. And I got cold feet a little bit thinking, oh, it looks a hot race. But she did it nicely.
And she's by Oasis Dream, who would have been one of the more high-profile established stallions in the field as well. Sometimes you get these two-year-old races, it's full of first-season sires. No one really knows anything about them. You knew yours could run, and you knew she had a bit of a pedigree to back it up.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's a fantastic stallion. He's getting on a bit now, but he's been a proven Group 1 sire for a number of years now.
So for those people who think, well, how on earth did that happen? Is Stuart doing something different? What would you say?
That we're not doing anything different at all. It's just we don't many times get our hands on precocious two-year-olds. I don't have a lot of money to spend at the sales usually. And it results in me buying a more backward type.
So this was an exception. How did you come across her?
She was unsold in the ring at the October sales from Ballyhane, Joe Foley. And I spoke to him afterwards. He said 20,000 would buy her. And my mother and my brother-in-law were looking for a filly. And we bought them. I bought her for them.
Oh, that's a fantastic story. Because you and I were talking at Kempton the other day about your horse that won, that your mother had bred and the family had kind of run out. So maybe this will be the beginning of a new dynasty.
Yeah, that's right. Along with my stepfather, who's now deceased, David Sheckles, whose colours the filly ran in yesterday, have now transferred to my mother. So, yeah, it's a nice story, yeah.
Okay, so you can dream now, or does she become too valuable for you to keep?
No, we'd quite like to keep hold of her. I'm not saying it's out of the question she doesn't get sold. I'd quite like her to stay in the yard, obviously.
Yes, exactly. And then, you know, you'd have to assume that she, at this stage, that you dream about her having the quality to run a nice race at Royal Ascot.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that'd be the plan. She was a little green yesterday, and I would have in mind to run again before Ascot, but that would be the aim.
And five or six, do you think, in time?
I don't think she's half a Mondeo mare. I don't think there's any problem with her getting six, but she has got plenty of speed, so I wouldn't be afraid to run a five again either.
And as I said, the horses are running fantastically well. Interesting theory. I spoke to one or two trainers who were way forward with their two-year-olds, and you wouldn't normally expect to see having two-year-old runners at this time of the year. And they said they're all much healthier than they would normally be at this time of year. Is that something you've found?
Yeah, well, my horses have been healthy all year. It changes year to year. Sometimes, you know, about 3 years ago, I was chasing a bug around the yard for about 4 months of the season, pulling my hair out, and for no apparent reason, don't know how to cure it and stuff like that. And I'm sure it's airborne viruses that go round, sort of thing. This year, Newmarket, we missed them.
And you've got an absolute stack of entries over the next few days. I suppose the most high-profile one, anyway, would be the Gill Brothers in the Spring Cup on Sunday at Newbury. Probably not the most straightforward, but he's certainly got a lot of talent.
He's a talented horse. He's actually quite straightforward. He just needs a fast pace to run at. And I keep managing to find races where there's no pace. That's a trainer error as much as anything. But he's a talented horse. He's a bit fragile. And he's had to have a couple of periods where he wasn't racing very often, which is unfortunate. But he's been good this season, and I'm very much looking forward to running him.
And you're going to find a strong pace at Newbury on Sunday, aren't you? If whatever it is, 30, if they don't go a decent pace up a straight mile with 30 runners, you're in all sorts of trouble.
In trouble, yes.
Stuart, thanks for talking to me, and well done yesterday.
Thanks very much.
Turning to other news now, and Chris Cook, the Racing Post's reporter, has written a story today about Brian Toomey. You'll remember Brian had a really nasty fall at Perth back in 2013, which he was very lucky to survive. And not only has he survived, he survived to carve out a new career as well. But he spoke with Chris yesterday about being denied an insurance payout following that fall and the effect that that's had on him. And Brian joins me now just to explain a little further. Brian, this has obviously been a significant blow for you. We've spoken a lot over the last few years. Just tell me a little bit about how this latest chapter in what's been a long story has been written.
Yes, Nick, how are you? Yeah, listen, Nick, I got turned down. My career ended in insurance, which I think is disgraceful, really. I mean, I was classed as a professional sportsman when the BHA licensed me to get back after the injury I had, after losing consciousness, after having half a metal head, but I was still licensed to get back. And obviously, the Professional Jockeys Association take out our insurance for us, and I got back, I had 23 rides, and then the year later, I've been turned down. I mean, it was all out of my control. I put a lot of determination into getting back, and I got back, but I couldn't force neurologists or doctors or neurosurgeons to pass me fit. I was lucky enough to get passed, and then I got stopped, which I felt very hard done by, because obviously I put my whole life into it, and I nearly lost my life from it, but like a lot of blood, sweat and tears went into it, and I've been left with nothing afterwards, which I feel quite hard done by, you know what I mean? Listen, everything helps going forward, and everything I would have received would have helped me on my next chapter of finding. I'm on the lookout at the moment for my own yard to start training, but you know, like everything would have helped, and it would have put me in a more comfortable position.
Just to put this into some sort of context for those who haven't heard your story, you got as close to death as you can, and miraculously you survived. That's not an exaggeration, is it?
No, it's not. No, obviously I lost consciousness when I got the fall in Perth in 2013, and lost consciousness for 6 seconds, and then my poor family were told that I had a 3% chance of survival. And yeah, I cannot believe how I've come out the other side as good as I've had. And as I said to Chris, apart from going through an airport, it takes a bit longer. I wouldn't know like that I've had such a bad injury in the past. Like I'm very, very lucky. But I was just hoping for a bit of comfort after all I've been through. But I've been left with nothing from Aviva, the insurance company. Apparently it wasn't career-ending, even though my career was taken off me, you know.
And can you appeal or not, or is that the end of the road?
Well, you could appeal and it could go to the High Court, but that would cost thousands. I don't have that behind me willing to fight it in the High Courts. But as I said, the Professional Jockeys Association took out the licence for those jockeys, and it turns out when I was first passed fit to ride, I obviously wasn't insured. I was only insured from the shoulders down. I wasn't insured from my head. So this has just come out, Nick, but I've been fighting this for a very long time, and I can't believe it's come to this, really. It's a pity, because as professional sportsmen and jockeys, obviously, insurance is something that you can always hopefully depend on if worst comes to worst. If you have a career and an injury, you've got a bit of comfort at the end that you can take forward.
So what are you going to do now? We've talked a little bit about the possibility of you starting training. Is that still on the agenda?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the lookout for yards. I'm on the lookout all the time and speaking to many people. At the moment, I ride out every morning for Clive Cox. Clive's very, very, very good to me, and obviously John Frankham, they look after me. So I'm very keen to find a small yard and make a start, and any support along the way would be a massive help.
Well, just some breaking news now coming through just before I put this to bed, and that is that you've seen joint licences around Daniel and Claire Kubler, I think, were one of the first, John and Thady Gosden recently. News is that there's going to be the first non-family joint licence about to take place in the UK. William Muir is with me now to tell me a bit more. So, William, you're going to share the licence with Chris Grassick, is that right?
Yeah, me and Chris are going to share a licence, yeah.
And how's that going to work, and how did it come about?
Well, it's come about really because I've known Chris for a little while, and he's a nice guy. He's done a lot of work outside, and he wanted to start training. And in this game, it is very, very tough at this time what we're in. We're in a bad time. And I think if a young trainer setting out to start training, it's going to be very, very tough. So he said to me, "Would you?" And listen, I'm the sort of person I like to help people. So I wanted to help him. So if we have a joint license, we both work really, really hard. We both get stuck in. I've got so many horses. Chris has got some people that's going to support him as well. So there may be a few more horses come, but either way, I can help him. We can work hard together. We get on well together. So it's me trying to help somebody get going, and if Chris down the line gets offered a big job, or he might not want to do that, he might say, "No, I like what we're doing, let's keep doing it." But it's just one of those things. We work well together. He's been with me since January, and hopefully we can just make it work well.
Tell me a bit more about Chris, William, where he's from and sort of what age is he?
Well, Chris is 27. He has done 3 years with Archie Watson for the last 3 years. Before that, he was with Dean Ivory for a year or two. He's been with Dali Japan, where he was out in Japan running one of their operations out there. So he's been around and done quite a lot of things. His father's from the great Grassick family. So his father still works. He's manager of Carisbrook Stud, just up the road. I met his dad years ago when we moved our horses there, our mares there. So I've known his dad for a little bit longer. And it's just a good family. But Chris is, I've seen him on the gallops when he's been with Archie ever since he's been with Archie. I met him up on the gallops. I thought, what a nice lad. And he's not like a lot of people that want everything. And he's a worker. He's like me. I'm out here every morning the same. You know, same time, same thing. But I've got somebody that I can talk and share it with.
And how are the horses going, William? Tell me how the stable star is coming along, Pile Driver.
Yeah, he's in great shape. He's doing everything we're asking of him. His work's good. He's stronger. He looks. But he's still just a beautiful mover, and he does everything wonderfully well. He makes his first appearance, if all keeps going well, on the 1st of May in the Jockey Club at Newmarket. So that's where he's going to open his account this year. He looks fantastic, to be honest, Nick. He couldn't be better. He just looks Same.
Perfect.
Same. Moves fantastic. But the string's great. We've only run four horses. We've had 3 seconds and a winner. Oh, sorry, five. We were on one Monday that finished fifth, but run very well. So they've all run particularly well. And they're all just about ready to get firing on all cylinders probably after next week.
Cheers, William. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick. Bye.
William Muir there. My thanks to him, to Brian Toomey, to Stuart Williams, and to Philippa Cooper, and of course to Rishi, who's going to send you home with a winner.
And I'm going to the Craven Stakes. Charlie Appleby's got two runners in the race. Master of the Seas in the Hood is seemingly the better fancy than the shorter price, but I prefer La Barossa. I think Master of the Seas isn't straightforward, as he proved by racing too freely in his comeback run at Maidan. He raced too freely at the back end of the season when he went to Ireland. And La Barossa, I think, is far more straightforward, showed a really bright turn of foot when he was in a bit of trouble to win the Superlative Stakes at Newmarket, and was travelling really nicely in heavy ground at the end of last season in the Criterium International. I think he's much better than that, obviously. And I'm going to take him to use what I think he possesses, a really potent turn of foot. And I think that will prove decisive in the Craven Stakes today.
La Barossa in the Craven Stakes today for Godolphin and James Doyle. That was Thursday, April the 15th. Rishi, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. We're back to do it all over again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.